Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and it's time for the weekend wrap. Just a quick announcement this weekend. Next weekend, as we all know, is a special Memorial Day weekend. So, on the weekend wrap and the Pugilist Corner next week, we will be giving away signed T-shirts from the champion, Mr. Kid Chocolate, and also a Wounded Warrior T-shirt signed by Mr. No Doubt Trout. So just some days to look forward to next weekend. Joseph, how are you doing this week?
Well, I tell you what, brother. Anytime we get a ton of boxing action when the top faces of the sport are on display, I can't complain regardless of how bitter the outcome is. James, I think you know what I'm referring to, my friend. And I fear this. You know how we feel about Lamont Havoc Peterson on this show. My goodness, he was up against it. And you know what they say in the hurt business, in the immortal words of Mike Tyson? Well, everyone has a fight plan until they get hit. And we saw Lamont Peterson's fight plan go tragically out the window as soon as he tasted the power of Lucas Martin Mathisev. My goodness. James, I've been telling every one of our listeners, including yourself, this for over a year now, that Lucas Mathisa, despite him not having a major world title, now he does, obviously, but I said this over a year ago, he is the baddest man at 140. And it's just all he needs is the opportunity to prove it. So, James, I'm going to ask you, as bitter as this may be to swallow, are you a believer now of the Argentine badass, Lucas Martin Mathisa?
Well, Joe, like they say, seeing is believing. And you know how, everyone knows how I feel about Lamont Peterson, so it was, for me, it was kind of hard to watch, but on the other hand, you know, it was a performance that you know, you just had to see to believe. Lamont, like, you know, he did everything that he was supposed to do, but like you said, once you get hit and you taste that power, you know, there was just no recovery. I think that the stoppage was fine, and I'm glad that Lamont didn't take that much punishment, but it was very tragic to watch.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about two stoppages this week, especially. One, we're going to talk about the Lucas Mathisa and Lamont Peterson stoppage. And with Steve Smoger is pulling the trigger, I don't think there's any question on whether or not it's just, right? If Steve Smoger sees that, hey, this guy can't go any further, well, then you better believe that he can't go anymore. That's just the way it is. But we're also going to talk about a very controversial stoppage in which a lot of people are complaining about the brutality of it and should it have gone as far as it did. And I'm referring to Dennis Lebedev and Guillermo Jones. Now, we're going to get to that in a second after we address what an awesome hit machine Lucas Mathisa is. But just to give you a little insight as to what we're going to discuss, everyone is overreacting on the Dennis Lebedev debacle. Everyone is overreacting, and guys, stay tuned because I'm going to prove it. I'm going to back up my words, and I'm going to remind everyone that this is the hurt business. Yes, it is the sweet science, but it is also a very much a contact sport still. Now, you see what people are trying to do to the NFL, trying to make a kinder, gentler version of the NFL, well, you're going to ruin the sport just like a lot of people have ruined boxing. Boxing is in that gray area right now where, to most diehard fight fans who have been watching the sport for a considerable amount of time, you and I are included in that category, the drama isn't able to unfold any further because of people who are worried about liability. Guys, let the fighters fight, okay? Let the drama unfold in the ring. But I'm sorry, until that happens, you will never see another Corrales Castillo, another Vasquez, Marquez. You'll never see another Gaddy Ward, ever, unless you let the fighters fight. Let them fight through adversity. And that's all I'm going to say about that for the time being. Let's focus on Lucas Matisse versus Lamont Peterson. Oh, my goodness. And I warned everybody, he's a much more technically proficient fighter than everyone realizes. We talked to Lamont Peterson a couple weeks ago on the Pugilist Corner, and he said, you guys are absolutely right. I've been watching his tape, and he's a much more technically proficient fighter. And also, I think Lamont realized that he has much faster hands than he had anticipated. Lucas is explosive. And he doesn't just wing shots. He delivers them with pinpoint accuracy. Unfortunately, Lamont Peterson forgot a very crucial rule in boxing. Don't hook with a hooker. As soon as he got floored by that left hook, it was all over. You knew he wasn't going to recover. You knew he wasn't, and so did Steve Smoger. Now, one of the things that referees actually look for when deciding whether or not a guy can recover is he looks right at his eyes. And you saw the shifty-eyed Lamont Peterson trying very hard to recover. But when you get your brain shaken like that, it's impossible. It takes time. And unfortunately, 10 seconds just isn't enough. Steve Smoger, although he loves to let guys fight, he's not going to give you more than 10 seconds. That's just how it goes. Those are just the rules, man. Well, maybe you can be like a Kenny Bayless with Amir Khan and say, hey, step forward, step back, now step forward, now we're cha-cha-cha-ing. Hey, guess what? I've just counted to 18. Are you ready to continue? Now, Steve Smoger doesn't roll like that, man. He is a credit to the sport, and he'll let you fight if you can fight back. Unfortunately, Lamont wasn't able to, and he knew it. He knew he wasn't going to recover. He was just going to be subjected to more punishment. So God bless you, Steve Smoger. Lamont Peterson fights another day, and from what Golden Boy is saying, he's going to fight as soon as the doctors deem him ready. Because, like him or not, Lamont Peterson is a credit to the sport. He's a great ambassador in boxing, and he comes to fight, and he doesn't duck anyone, unlike several fighters that I know of. And the proof is in the pudding. He took on probably the most feared man at 140, Lucas Matisse. He put his title on the line as a result, and he paid the price for it. But all glory and honor to Lamont Peterson. He's a credit to the sport. That's what made boxing great to begin with. Title holders did not just hold their titles and cherry-pick their opposition. They fought the best that was available. That's what's expected of you when you don that title, when you put that belt around your waist. That's what the fight public expects. So I tell you what, even in loss, my hat goes off to Mr. Lamont Peterson. My friend, hold your chin up high, just not in the ring. And you're a credit to the sport, my friend. Your thoughts, James, before we go any further, on the valiant effort of Mr. Lamont Peterson.
Yes, sir. Like I said, Lamont is a great fan of your show. We're looking for him to bounce back. Right now, I believe, they're saying that, like you said, they want to get him right back in the ring as soon as possible. I believe It was on Eastside Boxing. I'm not sure whether it's, of course, you know, it's not a done deal. But Mr. Schaefer has plans to match Matisse and Garcia and have perhaps Lamont and Zab Judah on the undercard in September. So we are looking forward to seeing him back in the ring.
Absolutely. And, you know, I told you guys this a long time ago. After Matisse cracked Mike Dallas Jr., obliterated him in one round, less than a round, I should say, their big plans were to pit Danny Garcia and Lucas Matisse in a huge event at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. I told everyone that, and everyone's like, well, why don't you just put him in the ring now then? Well, guys, it's really easy to say if you're not a fight promoter and you're not putting up the money for an event. It's really easy to say, hey, let's just put two guys in the ring. But no, 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 guys. A matchup has to mature. It's like a cake. You don't just put it in the oven for 2 minutes and think that it's going to be ready. No, it has to mature. It has to have time to bake. It has to have time to rise. And unfortunately, no one, very few people outside of the circle of diehards have ever even heard of Lucas Matisse. And I don't know if they're going to be able to because of the feud that Golden Boy and HBO are having right now. Now, Danny Garcia is reaping the rewards of taking care of business in spectacular fashion on HBO. HBO recognized by most mainstream sports fans as the biggest stage of boxing. Guys, I know Showtime has made great strides in getting a wider audience, but they're still not comparable to HBO. I'm sorry to say that. Yes, they've been putting on great fights, absolutely. But according to the mainstream audience, they're not on par with HBO. And unfortunately, Golden Boy has the tough task of making this a mature mainstream matchup without the benefit of having him on HBO. That's going to be a very, very tough task. Because I'm sorry, Showtime, sorry, you're just not doing it for casual sports fans, guys. I know you're trying, and you're doing a great job, but you're just not there yet. And I don't know if they're going to get there yet. And I tried to explain this a long time ago, that, guys, it has very little to do with boxing. It has everything to do with original programming. HBO just has the better movies, the better original series to capture the imagination of the mainstream viewer. And guess what? Boxing benefits as a result. Showtime doesn't have that. Not yet. Let's hope that they do. But I tell you what, that's going to be a big obstacle to overcome. So quite honestly, what I would do if I were Showtime is I would put Danny Garcia and Lucas Matisse on the undercard of a big Canelo Alvarez fight or a big Floyd Mayweather fight and mature that matchup that way. Now, obviously, Danny Garcia, he's got the trash-talking machine in his corner, and he has the ability to hype any event because of his marketing man, his dad. That guy's got a mouth that's worth gold. He's got a million-dollar mouth. But you're not going to get it from Lucas Matisse. One, he doesn't know very much English. Two, that guy, and I call him the pocket-sized Gennady Golovkin, not because of his ability in the ring, but because of his mild temperament outside of it. This guy doesn't have any ill feelings towards anybody, even if they try to get the worst out of him. He'll just smile at you, and he'll say, hi, you're a funny guy. Good luck in the ring. It's he doesn't turn into that violent death machine until he gets in the ring. He's a guy who's going to shake your hand, look you in the face, and say, you know what, best of luck to you, brother. Because he realizes that boxing is about sportsmanship. and athleticism, and he's one of the great ambassadors of the sport. But unfortunately, that really ties your hand as a promoter. Good luck promoting that to the mainstream audience that love Mike Tyson, that loves the Floyd Mayweather trash-talking machine, that loves Angel Garcia. It really makes you have to spend more money on PR. Lucas Matisse, they're going to have to do a great job of marketing to really build this matchup. But unfortunately, it's inevitable, guys. We're going to see it. Golden Boy knows it. And they're really going to try to make this a huge event in Philadelphia. James, your final thoughts on this before we start breaking down Lebedev, Jones.
Well, I'm looking forward to this fight. As you say, I mean, you know, it's probably going to take a little bit of publicity here. We've already had Paulie Malignaggi, another good friend of ours, talking about it. He thinks that Mike has enough power to possibly make this a great fight. But, hey, you know, Angel, we know what Mr. Garcia is going to do with this here. So, you know, we all expected a great at least press conference for the whole thing. But, yes, I'm looking forward to it. And like I said, even more than that, I hope Lamont is fine and we get to see him on the Adam card.
Absolutely. And I think because of the intervention of Steve Smoger, we're going to see it. We're going to see him come back better than ever, and I can't wait. But, guys, I do want to focus a little bit on a cruiserweight bout in which the title changed hands. Okay, and I'm referring to Denis Lebedev versus Guillermo Jones. Guillermo Jones hadn't fought in 2 years. Everyone thought he was an old man. Guys, just like Floyd Mayweather, he was a well-preserved 40-plus-year-old guy who hadn't taken any hard leather in several years. And if you didn't know it, now you do. Guillermo Jones is one bad dude. And the only reason why he isn't a more prominent figure in boxing is because of who his promoter is. He's still loyal to Don King. To a fault, obviously. Don King, this guy, he is incapable of cultivating anyone's career anymore. One, because he's too old. Two, because no one wants to work with him because of all the bridges he's burned over the years. Well, sorry, Don, but you're not doing any of your fighters any justice, including your badass cruiserweight, Mr. Guillermo Jones. My goodness. They fought for Lebedev's WBA title. And let me tell you, I'm sickened by the backlash of this fight. Everyone talks about, oh my gosh, what a brutal beating. This fight should have been stopped midway through the bout. That eye was horrendous. Guys, I'm going to remind you of something. Denis Lebedev didn't take any more punishment than anyone else who fought this weekend. Now, let me ask you this, James. When Rockman had that huge Easter egg on his head when he fought Evander Holyfield almost a decade ago, did he take an unbelievable amount of punishment to get that? No! James, I'm going to bring something else up also. When ferocious Fernando Vargas, got that huge, disgusting Easter egg on his eye, just like Denis Lebedev against Sugar Shane Mosley in their first bout, did he take an unusual amount of punishment to get that?
No, I wouldn't.
You're absolutely right, my friend. So, guys, you can obviously tell who didn't watch the fight. and who's just reacting to the pictures that they saw. Guys, if you watch the fight, it was a great fight, arguably fight of the year. And it was for the WBA title in the cruiserweight division. His eye just ballooned up. It was a freak accident, just like anyone else that's happened to. But there's something wrong with today's boxing. The doctors, the referees, they don't allow that kind of stuff to continue any longer. They just don't. I remember back as late as the late 80s, early 90s, they would allow it to continue back in the day. And guys, remember, this was for Lebedev's WBA title. Why on earth would you stop it in the 11th? He was counted out, but the ref was obviously counting quickly. That was absurd. James, did you watch the fight and did you notice how quickly the ref was counting to 10? I counted to 5 and he was already waving him off. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I think we all know it was a kind of quick count, but Joseph, Mr. Skeptical.
Brother, I'm sorry. I love a little fight in my fight, my friend. And honestly, like I said, we're never going to see a Gaddy Ward ever again, guys. We're never going to see a Gaddy Ward ever again if people keep reacting this way. Guys, this sport is not for the faint of heart. It used to be, there used to be a time when fighters would complain even if they were getting the bejesus knocked out of them. It would be obvious, oh gosh, man, just stop the fight. And as soon as the ref would wave it off, they'd be complaining right in the ref's face. Hey, I was fine. What are you doing stopping the fight? I was fine. I was going to punch back eventually. But no, not anymore, dude. Everyone has become a little gun shy. Or I mean quick to pull the trigger, I should say. Because of some of the tragedies that have happened, guys, in the ring. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe you're going to think I'm too hardcore. But I'm sorry, guys. Where's your bleeding heart? For all of the people who are on life support, and because they can't afford good health care, the doctors, just to make room, pull the plug on them. Where's your bleeding heart for those guys? Also, the millions of people who continue to smoke, where's your bleeding heart for them? Don't get in the way of boxing, guys. These fighters know exactly what they're getting themselves into, and they're fine with it. Just like smokers know exactly what they're getting into, and they're fine with it. Leave them be. Stay out of our sport, guys, because you're ruining something that is very, very special. The drama that unfolds in the squared circle is second to none, or at least it used to be. Guys, let's get that back. I'm sorry, but we never will. Why would you call a quick count and stoppage to the amazing fight that was happening, Lebedev versus Jones? It was in the 11th round, for Christ's sakes. 4 more minutes. Lebedev deserves to be able to continue if he wants to. It's his title, damn it. Let him go out on his shield. What a great fight that was. And I have to tell you, my hat's off to both guys. Amazing, amazing fight. And anyone who didn't realize what a badass Guillermo Jones is, well, now you know. This is a guy that probably could whoop every cruiserweight in the division if he's just given the opportunity. But unfortunately, he needs to jump ship. He needs to start working with K2 or Top Rank or Golden Boy Promotions. This guy's a badass. He could probably compete at heavyweight. Now just ask Braithwaite, the truck, what a badass Guillermo Jones is. Well, he found out the hard way. James, your final thoughts before we start talking about Alexander Povetkin and Devin Alexander.
So, I'm kind of with you about Jones. I think Jones might have been, I won't say the best-kept secret, but just the fact that he's with the Arcade, Mr. Don King, doesn't do a lot for his career. But, is he going to be able to get another fight? That's the most important thing. I mean, we all know how Don is, but, hopefully for this guy and the showing that he's just put forth, that someone will be willing to work with Don and get him back in the ring. Or, as you just suggested, maybe it's time to jump ship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, if he still wants to have a fruitful fight career, he'll jump ship. Now, obviously, people in King's Corner are going to state and they're going to defend Don King and say, well, after this big of a layoff, there's no reason why he would have gotten even a title opportunity had it not been for the intervention of Mr. Don King. It's not like everyone's knocking down Guillermo Jones's door to get a fight. But Don, that's your fault. You're the reason why no one's knocking down his door for a big fight. So shut the hell up. Hey, man, you've done the best you could. You ripped off as many fighters as you possibly could. Your time is done. Please step aside and allow these fighters to have fruitful careers and to fight more than once every 2 years. Thank you very much. In the immortal words of Bill Clinton, our former president, thanks, thanks, but no thanks. Okay? Thank you very much. Thanks for playing. Step aside now. But I tell you what, some other great fights. Alexander Povetkin defended his title and whooped up on an undefeated Polish fighter. Very impressive performance. But does this mean anything? Does this prove anything? Does this mean that he's going to fight Vladimir Klitschko? Obviously, his promoter, Sauerland, won the purse bid. They want the fight in Russia. Well, Russians aren't too fond of the Klitschkos. They are very quick to say, hey, you know what? He's not Russian. He's a former Soviet, but he's not Russian. He's Ukrainian. And we're going to support the Russian all day long. That's fine. You can support anyone you want, Ruskies. But guess what? It's still not going to keep your man from getting a beat down, because that's exactly what's going to happen. And quite honestly, I have to see it to believe it, James, when it comes to Povetkin versus Klitschko. I have to see him to believe it. He's pulled out of this fight way too many times for me to believe it. Honestly, I'm starting to get just as skeptical as I was about David Haye. That guy backs out of more fights than Floyd Mayweather Jr. But James, very quickly before we get the esteemed Mr. Ronnie Shields on the show, what were your thoughts on Devin Alexander's shutout performance against the valiant but overmatched Lee Purdy?
Well, first of all, I was glad to see Devin fight. To me, this was probably the most exciting that he's been in the last at least 2 years. So on that note, I was really pleasantly surprised. As for Mr. Purdy, I thought he put forth a gallant effort. We all know that he took the fight on short notice. So congratulations to Mr. Purdy, and congratulations to Devin for realizing that he is a fighter, and for the first time, like I said, in a couple of years, really putting forth an effort.
Well, I think we've seen in a more mature version of Devin Alexander in his last, I guess, two out of last three fights against Marcos Maidana. He looked absolutely superb in knowing his limitations, which is he has nothing on the inside. He can't fight on the inside. He can't defend himself on the inside. So what does he do? He's resorted to tying his man up and using his feet and his jab and his straight left hand. and his beautiful uppercut to keep his man in no man's land, which is at arm's length. He's done a wonderful job against Mike Donna and now against Lee Purdy in recognizing his limitations and not letting his opponent work on the inside. That's one of the reasons why he looked so miserable against Timothy Bradley. Tim Bradley recognized that he's a donut fighter. He's great on the outside and at mid-range, but he has absolutely nothing on the inside. But it looks like he's learned from that, and he says, you know what? Nope, I'm not going to let him do a damn thing. I'm going to tie him up as soon as he gets on the inside, and I don't care if anyone says anything about it. I'm going to win this fight. And even though I'm not letting this guy fight and I'm tying him up to all get out, guess what? I'm going to get the W on my resume. And that's all anyone's going to remember. And that's all I care about, quite honestly. And he's absolutely right. He looks absolutely superb from mid to long range. Beautiful reflexes, beautiful hand speed, good power, good footwork, good movement, fights at angles extremely well. He is an awesome talent from mid to long range. And as long as he recognizes his defensive deficiencies on the inside, he is going to be a very tough fighter to beat at 147. James, do we have the esteemed Mr. Shields on the line, sir?
No, sir. Give me one moment. We're having just a few problems connecting, but I should have him within the next minute.
Very good, sir. I'll keep on going. Tell you what, guys, getting back to Mr. Lucas Matisse, I don't think there's any question who the class right now is at 140. Obviously, you have to say Danny Garcia, because he just defeated a very game Zab Judah, a very experienced fighter. He knocked out Eric Morales, and he knocked out Amir Khan. Three very impressive wins back to back to back. And until anyone shuts his dad up, you can't do anything to discredit those performances. But I tell you what, credit to Danny Garcia, because you know he's going to take the fight with Lucas Matisse. He's a credit to the sport, and he fears no fighter. He genuinely believes that he can beat anybody. So you're going to see him take that fight, and it's going to be awesome. Let's just hope that Golden Boy can and their press machine can do a good enough job to hype up this event so it receives the billing that it deserves. That's my only hesitation. Yes, sir.
It's time for a little straight talk with Ryan Shields. Proper introductions, please.
Guys, it is always a privilege and an honor to feature this gentleman who is all class, one of the best ambassadors of the sport and elite level trainer. Welcome, Mr. Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, how are you doing this evening, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Just, you know, waiting until 8:30 to get my time, man.
I love it, man. And I tell you what, all of our listeners have been waiting with bated breath, my friend, because I tell you what, you are the soothsayer this year. You picked Matisse to win this fight by knockout. How did you know that this was going to happen, my friend?
Well, you know, I don't know. I just been watching Matisse, man. I just see where he's such an ugly puncher, and I don't think Lamont Peterson really believed that he was a big puncher. But I kind of figured he would come out the way he did. You know, I told you he had to Lamont had to have a faster start than he did for Kendra Hope. And he did. And he boxed great in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought he was going to continue to box that way. I didn't think Matisse would catch him so early. I thought, you know, if Lamont boxed him the way he did the first round, I figured he probably can do that for 6-7 rounds. And maybe even get Matisse out a little bit, you know, get him behind and get him less desperate. And, you know, have Matisse to just start trying to just pull him around the ring. But, of course, that didn't happen. I couldn't believe he came out in the second round just the opposite of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was totally ridiculous. I mean, why? You had a great first round, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, boxing 101 tells you that, you know, if a guy is not making you change to do anything different, why do something different? That's boxing 101. And, you know, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, he went right to the middle of the ring. And
well,
I said, uh-oh. As soon as I saw that, I was like, well, what is he doing?
And you know, I have to be honest with you, Ronnie. Yeah, before you go any further, Ronnie, I have to tell you. I mean, I love Ronnie. And, I mean, I love Lamont and Barry. And quite honestly, it hurt my heart to see that. I'll let you finish what you're going to say, but I just had to interject that. It really hurt my heart to see that. And unfortunately, man, this is the hurt business indeed now, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't. But, you know, I mean, I understood his frustration, you know, a little bit, that he struck him hit behind the head. I mean, because if you've ever been hit behind the head, trust
debilitating.
Me, it's no joke.
It's dangerous.
You know, I mean,
it's life-threatening,
actually. It is. Very life-threatening. And I understand that he got a little irritated by that, but you still have to realize, you know, who in front of you. And the way you boxed him, if you'd have kept for that, you wouldn't have had any problems getting hit behind the head until you just had to worry about it when you got in the clinch. But then you complained to the referee then. But to go out and say, okay, I'm going to stand in front of you and beat you up because you hit me behind the head, that was the worst mistake he ever made, because then he felt the power. And after he felt the power, he still went back in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe, I don't know if that first punch knocked the sense out of him, or the behind the head knocked the sense out of him. I mean, I don't know.
He had no sense.
He didn't. I mean, he saw the beginning on the end.
Yeah, this is my theory, Ronnie, and let me know if you agree with this. This is just my theory, okay? You don't have to adhere to it. If you disagree, this is your segment, brother. You can say what you want. But my theory is, because you've seen Lamont, when he gets hurt, in the past, he gets in survival mode, and he's very good at it, at least he had been before this point, against Victor Ortiz, who has comparable power with Lucas Matisse. Boy, he just adapted, survived, and took over the fight in the later rounds.
Yeah.
Against Timothy Bradley, he adapted and made a great fight out of it in the later rounds. Against Amir Khan, he got up off the canvas, adapted, and won the fight, made a great fight of it in the later rounds. But correct me if I'm wrong, before that fight, before on all of those three fights that I just mentioned, he didn't have a title around his waist. Quite honestly, I think the title emboldened him almost to the point where it hurt him. He says, well, I'm a champion. Champions don't back up. Champions don't fight like this. Champions, okay, they get off their ass and they commence to getting their respect. That's what it looked like to me. And honestly, that's the only thing that makes sense in my mind, because you're absolutely right. This was not the Lamont Peterson that we've grown accustomed to seeing. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I agree with everything you said. That since he became champion, yes, he's gotten a lot bolder and everything. But remember what I said, you know, when I predicted this fight, that, you know, he's a fighter that you have to protect him from himself.
Yeah.
And that's the fighter he's become. He's become like that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think sometimes fighters think they have to go out and prove. Because, you know, because people go talk. Whether you're a champion or not, you're not going to satisfy every person that, you know, you can look the best you've ever looked in your life, but you're not going to satisfy everyone. So I think he's just gotten to the point to where now he's trying to satisfy people to say, well, you know, you ran, you boxed or whatever. No, you fought. That was the right way to do it. You know, the right way to do it, to fight smart like you did the first round. I mean, he looked very good. And to tell you the truth, he didn't look like he burned a whole lot of energy in the first round.
No, nope.
He looked very good. You know, he used his jab. You know, he threw combinations when he had to throw him. He tied him up when he had to tie him up. He got out of there in boxing. I gave him the first round very easy.
Yep.
And, you know, and just reading about what Batista was saying from the beginning is that he never expected to knock him out as early as he did. And because he expected Lamont to box the way he did the first round. And, I mean, and I did too. And I think everybody else did. But I don't know what happened that after one round he decided, I'm going to go and stand toe-to-toe with this man. You know, maybe because he didn't feel the power, because, I mean, he made Matisse miss a lot. You know, I know he got hit with a couple body shots and one good punch, and maybe he said, oh, man, this guy ain't got nothing, and so I'm going to test him on the inside. I think that was a wrong decision. And, you know, and I understand it happens. You know, it happens sometimes. You know, we want to do things that we didn't train for. You know, we want to change it up. But for him to change it up so early, you know. But even after he got hit and got dropped in on the first shot that he got dropped in, okay, he should have said, okay, now I got the rebound. I got to get back to what I did the first round. And you know, I don't know, because I don't think they went to the corner after that round. I'm not sure. I don't remember him giving any instructions. You know.
No.
Yeah.
No,
we would have
remembered what Master Yoda would have said in the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, when Barry talks, people listen, man. You know that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you know, I don't think they went. I don't think they put the mics in the corner. So
no.
I don't know. I don't know what he told him, but I mean, to me,
you knew it. You knew it was at stand and trade.
Exactly. Get back to boxing like you did the first round.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Ronnie? And I have to tell you, that's what happens, though. It's like we said on last week's show, Lucas Matisse has the ultimate neutralizer. If anyone can make you forget about your game plan, boy, it's someone with the power of Lucas Matisse. And that's exactly what he did. Now here's a very tough quandary that Golden Boy has ahead of them. Obviously, the logical matchup at this point would be Lucas Matisse versus Danny Garcia. Unfortunately, this isn't a matchup that is fully matured. It has in the eyes and the minds of the diehard fight fans, but not the amount or the number of, or I guess the type of audience that it would take to really give this fight the proper billing it deserves. And one of the reasons why is because Matisse, it's going to be really hard to market this guy as a killing machine, as a wrecking machine, because he's such a nice guy outside of the ring. He doesn't speak any English. He doesn't talk trash like Angel Garcia, and he never will be that. And unfortunately, Lamont Peterson, even though he's beaten Amir Khan, he's not exactly a household name, especially because of the way Golden Boy has treated his career over the past year and a half. So my thought is, and please tell me if you have a better idea here, what I would do, and we haven't talked about Sugar Shane Mosley versus Pablo Cesar Cano yet, but I think Lucas Matisse, to get that recognition and to really make this matchup a very enticing one in the eyes of the casual sports fans, they should pit Lucas Matisse up against Sugar Shane Mosley at 147 and possibly bill it as Lucas Matisse may be the first man to stop Sugar Shane Mosley. What are your thoughts on that, brother?
Well, you know, actually, I like that. I mean, I haven't thought about that at all, actually. But, I mean, but I really and truly like it. But I don't know, man. You know, Gordon Boy supposedly had this tournament going on, and supposedly sought to fight Danny Garcia next, which I think is a huge mistake because, you know, unless you put the fight on some kind of pay-per-view, you know, like in September on the card of Mayweather them or whatever, and make it a huge pay-per-view event, that's the only way I can really see that happening. But just reading with Amir Khan now, he's talking about he's going to go up to welterweight. So why do you have
don't
a tournament when one guy don't feel like he wants to fight anybody?
You know what, man? Oh, you know, I'm getting sick of reading quotes from Amir Khan. I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah.
You just went life or death with Julio Diaz. No discredit to Julio Diaz because I love him and his brother. Great guys. Two of the best guys you'll meet in the sports. But this isn't exactly a Julio Kid Diaz in his prime. You know, I don't want to hear anything from Amir Khan, man. I love Amir Khan. I think he's great for the sport. But, you know, stop talking trash, dude. Please, don't do it. you're going to get it, man. Don't do it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ronnie.
He's a confusing guy because first he's in the tournament. Now he don't want to be in the tournament. Now he wants
for the obvious reasons.
Yeah. So now he wants to. Now he says he's staying because he wants to fight Matisse. I don't really think you want to fight Matisse. Really, and truly, I don't. I don't really think you want to fight Devin Alexander. But that's what he claims he wants to go to 147. He said his chin is a lot better than 147. Now, the last time I checked, right, you, no matter how much weight you put on, you still have the same chin. Your chin don't change.
You're right on the money, brother.
So, I don't know. I think it's his brain, not his chin.
You know what's funny? Last time we spoke with Virgil Hunter, he said, look, I don't know what Amir Khan and Golden Boy are talking about. I see him, and I know what his body is like. And let me tell you, he's not ready for 147. Okay, he needs to grow into 147, and he's not ready for that yet. If you think he's having some problems taking punches from 140-pounders, boy, you better get ready for 147. Because, I'm sorry, the way he looked against Julio Diaz, he'll be lucky to go to distance, and no disrespect to this guy, he'll be lucky to go to distance with Carlos Obregón, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I don't know.
He's an enigma, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
But God bless him. I love Amir Khan. As wacky as he is, man, he's great for the sport. He's always in great fights. God bless him, man. Keep punching Amir. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, that's all you can say. But, you know, I really think, and it's almost like they're running into the same problem, Golden Boy, is that Top Rank had with Guillermo Rigondeaux and Donito Donaire. This matchup wasn't matured. And it didn't receive the kind of billing or hype that it deserved because it was a super fight. Well, guys, that's what we're going to see if Lucas Matisse steps in the ring with Danny Garcia. And unfortunately, the clout that both men have right now, Lucas Matisse being as unheralded as he is among casual fight fans, it's not going to be the super fight and receive the hype that it deserves. That's a big, big problem. I really think that both men need another fight in the interim, maybe even on the same fight card, to build this up, to mature this. Because anyone, any fight fan can say, hey, stick this in with this guy. It's a good style matchup. But it has to make sense monetarily. It has to be matured. And most fight fans don't understand that. Do you care to elaborate on that, Ronnie?
Yes, absolutely. You know, when you have a fight of this magnitude now, that both guys, really and truly, you have to call both guys world champions because, you know, they both, you know, are deserving to be world champion because, you know, Matisse just beat a world champion who, you know, and I'm still trying to figure out I heard him speak of it last night that there were so many problems, that's why they couldn't fight for the world title, which I never understood that, you know, but it's crazy. But when you have a fight of this magnitude, yes, it's deserving of all the publicity that, you know, so everybody should want to watch that fight if it materializes. But again, you got to understand also another thing that just came, that just happened was that Al Haymon is now representing Lucas Matisse, and he also represents Danny Garcia. So now that wasn't at the beginning when they first announced the tournament. You know, just Al Haymon wasn't involved with Matisse. But now that he is involved with Matisse, now Al may come back and say, you know what? You know, and Al Haymon was a very smart individual. Mm-hmm. He may come back and say, you know what? This fight is a lot bigger now than it could ever be. So I think we need to build it up. And this could have the potential to be a pay-per-view fight.
That's right.
If they build it up the right way. So I think,
If Showtime's smart, Ronnie, I think they're going to do this.
Absolutely.
Set up the rematch between Danny Garcia and Amir Khan. And also in the co-main event, pit Lucas Matisse versus Sugar Shane Mosley. Build it up that way. And I guarantee you, after that event, if both men take care of business, respectively, Danny Garcia and Lucas Matisse, which I think they would, I think it would be a super fight, and it would get the hype that it deserves. What are your final thoughts on this, Ronnie?
Yes, I think so. I think that's a great idea, and I think the fans will really, really enjoy something like that because, you know, both guys are well-deserving, you know, and you put them in a tough fight, and I think that's a tough fight, you know, with Mosley and Matisse and Amir Khan and Danny Garcia. But the outcomes, I still think the outcome will be knockouts on both sides. I think, you know, the fans will really be looking forward to a matchup between two punches.
That's right. That's right. And it's a super fight. Make no mistake about it. These two guys are capable of putting anyone's lights out with one shot. And this deserves a huge billing. Unfortunately, it's on Showtime. Nothing against Showtime. They've made great strides to build a bigger audience, but they're just not at HBO's level yet, not as far as subscription numbers.
Right.
And unfortunately, Lucas Matisse doesn't have the benefit, or Danny Garcia, of building this matchup on HBO any longer. That's a shame. But regardless, you know, we just hope that this fight gets the kind of billing that it deserves. Now, I'll give you your pick, Ronnie, because we only have about 8 minutes left. Do you want to talk about Alexander Povetkin's victory? The fight of the year candidate that was Guillermo Jones and Dennis Lebedev? Or do you want to talk about the Sugar Man, Sugar Shane Mosley, versus Pablo Cesar Cano in a very close competitive bout?
Yeah, I like to talk about Shane Mosley, actually.
Oh, very good. I was hoping you'd say that, brother, because we haven't addressed that fight yet. I tell you what, like it or not, Sugar Shane, man, is a joy to watch. This guy is, he's a competitor. Even if he still doesn't have the same reflexes, even if he still doesn't have the same pop or hand speed, man, he's a fighter. And you got to love his, you know, his heart and his mental and physical toughness. But what was your assessment on his performance against Pablo Cesar Cano, a gentleman who started out his career in the lightweight division?
Well, you know, I think Pablo Cesar Cano is a really, really good fighter. And he showed that against Paulie Malignaggi. So he showed a lot of heart. And you know, if you go back and look at that fight, you know, a lot of people still think that he won that fight. And, I thought it was a very, very close fight, and I wouldn't have been mad if he got the decision. And I figured it would be a tough fight with Shane Mosley. You know, I think when you realize, I think a lot of people don't really, I mean, people know Shane Mosley because of what he's done in his career. But I don't think people actually know that this guy lives in the gym. Even when he said he was retired, he still was in the gym. But that's Shane Mosley. That's how he is. So he never got completely out of shape like a lot of guys do when they say they call it quit, and then all of a sudden they take a year off and come back, and then they have to start all over again. But that's not Shane Mosley. Shane still goes to different gyms, still spar with different people, and I think he's always testing his skill levels out against other fighters because he comes down here a lot and spar with Jermaine Jamal, Charlo a lot. You know, I mean, but that's just Shane. That's the way he is. So I wasn't surprised to see him go 12 hard rounds the way he did against a young guy. So and because he's a gym rat, you know, he's able to do that. And you know, he still has a little something in him late in the fight.
That's right.
Absolutely, he still has a little something left in him. So you know, whoever fights him, you know, if you go in there thinking you're just fighting an old man, then, you know, you better get a gut check and rethink that because, you know, this guy can really come in and upset you. And he don't have the pop like he used to have anymore, but he still can hurt you, as you can see, you know, when he hurt Tano with that over his right.
Now, in retrospect, Ronnie, do you think people should have recognized how special Canelo Alvarez was when he made seemingly easy work of Sugar Shane Mosley back then?
Well, you know, I think people had already written Shane off at the time when he fought, you know, Canelo Alvarez. I really and truly believe
that's what I'm saying. Do you think in retrospect, maybe this makes Canelo's performance more impressive now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, because that's a funny thing about him, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people now go back and say, you know what? Canelo must really be good. You know, Shane looked that good against Cano. And, you know, but Alvarez just basically just won every round. You know, now you have to say, well, you know, we better start taking a better look at Canelo because this kid can really fight. You know, and he can.
That's right.
But Canelo Alvarez can really fight.
I think he proved all of that. I think he proved all of his naysayers that he can really fight. In his very impressive performance defensively against Austin Trout. My goodness, you know, make no mistake about this. No one had ever done that to Austin Trout.
No.
No one. I mean, in Austin Trout's all of his fights combined, I think you can maybe count on your fingers how many rounds he lost up to that point.
Absolutely.
That's how special of a performance Canelo's was. You know, and it was controversial. Some people still feel that Austin, that fight was a lot closer, and it should have been a lot closer on the scorecards. But be that as it may, Austin couldn't touch Canelo, and that was, I think, the most eye-opening thing about his performance. Not only can he beat you offensively, but, man, he's got some defensive skills. He's going to be a tough man to beat at 154. And notice I emphasize 154, Floyd Mayweather. My goodness.
Well, you know, it's no way in the world Canelo is going to go down to 147 to fight him. There's no way in the world Canelo is going to go down to 150 to fight Floyd. You know, why do you have a belt at 154 and you want to fight at 147? You know, I love Floyd Mayweather to death, but you know, I think it's more of his father now, you know, since his father is taking over. His father realizes that Canelo is way too strong for Floyd to fight at 154 because this is a young kid. They realize that this kid has skill. So what you do, you know, you do a number like Pacquiao there. You weight draining down to 147, and then you win, and you tell everybody you beat the best fighter that's second to his son. You know?
That's right.
But it's not going to happen that way because...
No. You know, last question I'm going to pose to you because we're right at the... We've got 1 minute left in your segment, Ronnie. Now, a lot of people are talking about why not Lucas Matisse versus Floyd Mayweather. For the obvious reasons, Lucas Matisse isn't a big enough name. and he's not even the unified champion at 140 yet. But how do you like that matchup, and what's the probability of that happening, my friend?
Well, I like the matchup, but I just, you know, I think Floyd is still a little bit too experienced for Lucas Matisse.
Well, I tell you what, that would be an awesome fight to see, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. He has a chance to hurt Floyd. You know, I mean, I think we've only seen Floyd hurt really once, and that was with Shane Mosley.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, and that speaks volumes on Floyd's defensive prowess. It's second to none, my friend. But unfortunately, Ronnie, we're at that time in your segment. My goodness, it flies by when we're speaking to the incomparable Mr. Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, I tell you what, you're awesome, man. We love you on the broadcast, and all of our listeners love you. We've received so many emails saying so. I tell you what, thanks, everyone, for listening in. Even if you're just listening for Ronnie, we really appreciate it. Ronnie, thank you so much for being on the broadcast once again, and we will talk to you in the aftermath of the awesome fight this coming up Saturday, Frotch versus Kessler 2. Aren't you excited, my friend?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a bomb battle that way.
Thanks for being on the air, Ronnie. God bless you, brother. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Well, guys, that was the incomparable Mr. Ronnie Shields. But right now, we have a very special treat for everyone and one of my favorite segments on the show. Guys, the master strategist, Mr. James Gogi, is going to grace the airwaves. He's going to break down last night's fight. And also, guys, he is going to treat us to a preview of the awesome Carl Froch versus Mikkel Kessler super fight that is happening this Saturday at the O2 Arena in London, England. JK, do we have Master James on the show?
Yes, sir. Proper introductions, please. It's time for Gogi's Breakdown.
Guys, I love this segment. I always look forward to this, and it is an absolute privilege to share the air with this gentleman, one of the best-kept secrets in boxing, master strategist, Mr. James Gogi. James, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Hey, Joe. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing great now that I get to get schooled once again. I learn something new every single time I listen to your segment. And, you know, I've received a ton of emails expressing the same thing. You always bring a lot of insight to the broadcast, and we love you for it, man. So, first of all, thank you for being on, I think, what is this, 60-some-odd weeks straight on the Pugilist Corners Weekend Wrap? Thank you very much, brother.
No, thank you. Thank you. You know, it's always good to get out there and, you know, talk boxing with our great fans out there that support boxing, because without fans, you know, boxing is nothing. You know what I mean? You got to have a fan base, and we have some great fans listening to the show every week, especially from England. And, you know, like I said, they're going to be treated to one hell of a fight this week between Carl Froch and Kessler, the rematch. So it's going to be a barn burner over there. Is it going to be in what, Nottingham, Joe?
No. Mikkel Kessler would not agree to Nottingham. So they decided on London, England.
Well, still, it's going to be in England, and it's going to be a barn burner over there, because there's going to be all kinds of fans from, Fox's hometown, Nottingham, going over there. So, you know, I don't understand why he wouldn't want to go to Nottingham. You know, he went over there to Denmark. Come on, give me a break. You know what I mean?
That's right.
You know, it ain't going to matter. He's still going to have the whole country in England behind him, because right now I'm pretty sure Carl Froch is, you know, I don't know if he's the top hottest fighter in England, but he's in that top two or three.
Oh, you're absolutely. Honestly, he's a folk hero now in England, especially after the way he took care of business like a man against Lucien Boutte. He is a folk hero at this point. And honestly, everything that he accomplishes from this point forward, according to his fans, is just going to be icing on the cake. So what I'm going to pose to you, James, is what do both men have to prove in this matchup at this stage in their career?
Hey, this is a huge fight. Hey, this is, the winner moves on to bigger and better things. the loser, well, it's a big step back. You know what I mean? Especially Kessler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's getting up there in age and everything. Plus, you know, all the injuries he's had, all the setbacks he's had lately, you know, this is a huge fight for him. And then he's got to do it in Crotch's backyard. So you know how it is when you go into somebody's hometown. You pretty much got to, you know, knock the guy out to win and everything. So, like I said, for Frotch, he's coming off a spectacular win, okay? One of the most exciting moments in boxing was last year when he knocked out Lucien Boutte. Oh, what a spectacular moment that was in boxing. That electrifying crowd of a sold-out arena, you know, and Frotch put on one of the best performances of his career when he unexpectedly knocked out Lucien Boutte last year and everything. And I really believe the whole country is going to come out and support Frotch in England, in London, England. And I really believe he's going to fight with that same intensity, the same tenacity like he did in Nottingham. And I really believe it's going to be hard for, Mikhail Kessler to get a win out there. The keys to Kessler, hey, everything comes off his jab. He's one of those
mm-hmm.
fundamentally sound European fighters where everything starts with his footwork. Everything, he works off his jab. Once he gets his jab going, and especially when he's hitting you, oh, he gets in the rhythm. The combinations flow off it, his footwork flow off it. He just got to, you know, he just gets in a nice, smooth, relaxed rhythm where he's controlling you and everything. So, once he, you know, mm-hmm. everything's going to be off that jab. He's got to feint a lot, too, to prevent Frotch from timing him with that counter overhand right he likes to throw. Frotch likes it, though. And if he does land it on Kessler, Frotch, the way he hits you, oh, good night. It might be like that replay of Matisse and Peterson last night. And
Ooh.
Kessler, man, let me tell you, it's uphill over there, man. He just can't go out there to outpoint him. He's got to really do some damage to Frotch, and he's really got to be physical and aggressive and put his combinations together and put a hurting on Frotch, because if he goes out there just to outpoint him, he ain't going to get a decision over there. You know, Frotch, he's going to do what he does. He's a very good technical boxer who loves the counter with that big overhand right, okay? Especially when he got you on the ropes. If he gets Kessler on the ropes, I'd throw that overhand right. Because Kessler, if you notice, when he gets on the ropes, he stands straight up. He doesn't bend at the legs and everything. And when he stands straight up, he's a live target to hit. So I would land that big overhand right. I'd work on landing that big overhand right. Or that combination Frotch likes to throw at long range is kind of unique. It's that right uppercut, left hook, right hand. A lot of fighters, when they throw that combination, it's usually a close range. But Frotch, he likes to throw it at long range, and it's very effective. He did it very, very effectively against Lucien Boutte, and that's how he was hurting Boutte. Then after that, he followed up with them big clubbing right hands to knock him out and everything. But like I said, Kessler, he's got to stay out the ropes. He's got to stay out of the corners, work everything off his jab, footwork, his feints, his combinations. Keep everything in the center of the ring, stay out of the ropes, stay out of the corners, and he'll have a better chance of winning, and throw a lot of combinations, you know, to leave no doubt in the judge's mind that, hey, I won the fight and everything, and hurt Frotch a couple of times if he can. But he can't stay on the ropes like Lucien Boutte. He can't stay in the corner, because once Frotch gets you on the corners, that's when he's going to load them big combinations, especially that big overhand right he likes to throw to hurt you and everything. Frotch, what he's got to do, he's basically got to take Kessler's jab away. How does he do that? Just like Andre Ward did. Every time he threw that jab, Andre Ward took it away. How did he do that? He picked it off with it. He parted with his right hand, and he double jab back. He triple jab back. He quadruple jab back, you know, just to take that jab away. Then he got back with that triple jab in, Kessler's face. That's what he did. He out-jabbed him and everything. He totally took away that jab. And once you take away Kessler's jab, the guy, he's very ineffective, because everything starts off his jab and his footwork. And when you take away his jab, he's pretty much defenseless. He pretty much can't do nothing. He can't get into rhythm. He can't get into to the flow of the fight. And Ward did it beautifully by picking his jab off with the right hand and picking that jab off and quadrupling that jab in Kessler's face. You know, he basically, every time Kessler threw that jab, Ward countered with two jabs, three jabs, four jabs. Then after that, he got back on Kessler with three or four more jabs in his face. And it totally took Kessler off his game plan. And when you took away his jab, pretty much he owned Kessler. And Kessler quit using that jab, and pretty much Ward did what he wanted to after that. And that's what Foch has to do. Real simple game plan. Just be physical with the jab and outwork Foch, you know, with his jab. And beat him to the punch with his jab.
You know, you're absolutely right, brother. And that is very, very insightful. Honestly, you know, it's amazing. A lot of people are thinking that this is going to be kind of a slugfest. It's going to be a hard-fought chess match, a lot of people think, kind of like the way the first fight was, with a little more brutality because of the confidence level of both men at this point. You know, but I think it's going to be a cerebral chess match. I think it's going to be very tactical, and I think we're going to see the best that boxing has to offer this weekend. Yes, I think both men are going to have their moments in the fight, but I think it's going to be a very tactical fight with both guys respecting each other's power. What are your final thoughts on this matchup? Do you think that both men are going to have respect for each other's power, or do you think Froch is going to come in with reckless abandon, just try to bomb him out like he did Lucien Boutte?
Nah, he ain't going to do that. Froch is very technical, very methodical before he starts loading them big bombs and everything, okay? He's not going to go in there all wild and throw everything, you know, everything from, you know, different angles, you know, at the beginning. He's going to set you up with his jab. He's going to be calm, calculating. Then when she sees openings, he's going to explode with combinations, especially at the opportune moments. Like if he gets Kessler in the corners on the ropes. Once he gets him on the ropes, well, he's gonna load on punches and everything. And like I said, that combination he likes to throw that was very effective was that right uppercut, left hook, right hand, and long range. And if he does that, he can hurt Kessler. But the thing is, when you fight in your hometown, you know, you become a 30% better fighter. You know, you get that extra energy surge from your hometown fans and everything. You know, if he does get hit with a good punch, you know, he's going to be able to shake it off because, you know, like I said, that just fighting in your hometown, the fans help you to victory and everything. You know, they assist you. They get behind you and they give you that extra surge and energy behind you. Even when you're tired, you know, to dig in and to pull forward, you know, for victory. That's why I said it's so hard to win in somebody's hometown, not only because, you know, it's an uphill battle with the judges, but the fans are behind you. And like I said, you get that extra 30% charge in you like you don't have if you don't fight in your hometown. So it's going to be electrifying atmosphere. Every time there's big fights in England, England is one of the, oh, man, their fans are pound for pound the best fans in the world. And, man, I wish I could be there because that atmosphere is going to be electric. And is it going to be on HBO, Joe? I think, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be on HBO this Saturday night. They're going to show it twice, once live and once broadcast prime time Saturday evening.
Well, guess what? HBO is starting to get stuff right this year, you know, because all that BS crap I've seen in the past, they throw this year, they're starting to put some real, real damn good matches. You know, look at the ones they have. Rios, Alvarado, Provotnikov, Bradley, now this fight. Oh, my God. Yeah, HBO is coming back. They're coming back swinging. Okay, they're coming back swinging this year.
Absolutely, brother. And quite honestly, I know, you know, most people, you know, aside from diehard fight fans, they usually don't look forward to a Chad Dawson fight. But I have to tell you, I love this fight between Chad Dawson and Adonis Stevenson. I'm expecting fireworks. And, you know, honestly, I'm really curious to see how Chad Dawson handles the awesome pressure and power of a guy like Adonis Stevenson. And that one's going to be displayed on HBO June 8th. Isn't that awesome, my friend?
Adonis Stevenson, he's a home run hitter, okay? He has that God-given physical strength, heavy hands, and punching power to take you out at any time. Anytime you got a fighter like that, it's always going to be exciting, okay? You know, there ain't too many home run hitters in boxing, okay? Not with the power like him, Gennady Golovkin, Lucas Matisse, okay? This guy's one of them and everything. He might be crude still and raw in skill, but who cares? When you can punch like him, you don't have to have a lot of skill, okay? All you need to do is land that one big punch and good night, party's over. And I really believe Chad Dawson's going to be very, very tentative of taking the lead on this guy. Be very, safety first, caution first, and, you know, box and counter punch and move. And, you know, because, you know, Chad Dawson don't have the best of the chins in boxing. And when he does get hit by this guy, if he gets hit, he's going to be on his butt, okay? So he's going to be very safety first, cautious, and it might be a stinger of a fight because if the fight, you know, gets in range, I mean, when Adonis Stevenson gets in range, you know, Thad Dawson might smother him and tie him up and everything. So we might get it. You know, we might be getting a boring slugfest right now. A boring fight if it happens, you know, where Chad Dawson, you know, like he's done in the past, becomes safety first. But Adonis Stevenson, hey, this was his chance to earn a rep in boxing. He's got to overcome all that. You know, if Chad Dawson is a safety first fighter, you know, he's got to take the initiative and go knock him out. Okay, if he tries to tie him up, don't let him tie him up. Okay, you know what I mean. Keep his elbows tucked in tight so there ain't nothing to grab and rip them uppercuts. Then when he gets that range, he'll land that big 1-2. Okay, try to land that short right hook inside, which he does real good. Them short right uppercuts. Don't let Chad Dawson, dictate the fight. Make it safety first. Don't let him tie you up on the inside. Okay, make it a rough physical fight. And like I said, this is his chance to make a name for himself. What is he, 35, 36, Joe? Adonis Stevenson?
Oh, yeah, he's getting long in the tooth, but he got a late start as well.
He's got to do it now. Okay, Liver, just like, what's that guy that blew it against Sergio Martinez? What's his name?
Oh, Martin Murray.
Martin, he blew it. Now this kid can't. He blew it. This kid have an opportunity in a lifetime. You can't blow these opportunities, okay? This is his one chance to show HBO, hey, man, I can be a star if you get behind me. Well, knock him out, and HBO will get behind him, okay? If he goes down there and makes it a stinker, oh, God, he'll be back in the, in the soup line like everybody else trying to get on to HBO. But he's got to be exciting. He's got to knock this guy out. Bottom line, no decision. He's got to knock this guy out.
Very insightful stuff, James, and I love the way you think, my friend. You've got your finger on the pulse of boxing in the minds of all of the diehard and casual fight fans.
Mm-hmm.
Knockout sell. And if you want to sell your career to the likes of HBO, then, yep, you either have to go life or death or knock your opponent out. You're absolutely right. And I look forward to seeing something like that on June 8th, my friend.
Joe, you want me to tell you a story? I talked to one of my good friends, Joe Goosen. Oh, I consider one of the best trainers in boxing. And we were talking about Michael Nunn's career. From his fights 10 to 17 he had with Joe, he was just outpointing the guy, nothing spectacular, winning. But, was rather boring while he was doing it, not entertaining and stuff like that. He told me that Bob Arum sent an airplane, sent him to Vegas with him and Michael Nunn. They didn't understand why Bob sent him there. Bob Arum sent him there to Vegas to have a meeting with him. So when they walked in the meeting, Bob Arum sat him down. He told Michael Nunn, "You want to make $25,000 or $1 million?" And Michael Nunn goes, looked at Joe Goosen, "Of course, I want to make $1 million." And Bob Arum told him, "Start knocking him out." That was the end of the meeting right there. They went back home to California after that. After that, you started knocking guys out. Frank T. Sambu Kalambe, okay? Okay? That was the meeting right there. That's why he called him the Vegas. You want to make $1 million or 25 grand, okay? You want to make $1 million, start knocking them out, okay? If you want to make 25 grand and keep fighting on ESPN or Fox Sports Network, well, that was back then. Now it's like $10,000. Keep going to decision with your opponent. Bottom line.
You're absolutely right, my friend. You're absolutely right. Now, I tell you what, we've got about 12 minutes left in your segment, brother, and we do want you to dissect what went wrong in Lucas Matthysse's versus Lamont Peterson's performance. Now, obviously, very little went wrong with Lucas Matthysse's performance, but what on earth was Lamont Peterson thinking, standing in the pocket and trading with quite possibly one of the hardest pound-for-pound punchers in boxing, my friend?
I know one thing. Lucas Matthysse wants to make $1 million, okay? He's been knocking guys out time and time. He gets it, Joe. He understands, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He gets it. He wants to make $1 million, okay? Lamont Peterson, he just got back to that, the bravado, the macho, the machoism in him. And, once he started seeing Matthysse started bringing it to him, he started saying, "Ah, the hell with it. I'm going to have to bang with this guy." It wasn't too smart, okay? like I said last week in the preview of the fight, he cannot match this guy punch for punch. Because if he does, you know, Matisse, Sammy is a Sammy Sosa, Mark McGuire type fighter, a home run hitter. He can take you out at any time. And guess what? I guess Peterson found out the hard way yesterday. But he basically got into a slugging match with him too early, man. He should have boxed him like he did the first round for like the first 6-7 rounds, polyped some points at least before, you know, trying to match him punch for punch. And at close range, shit, tie him up. You know what I mean? Not try to, you know, not try to bang with this guy, not try to make match him punch for punch. Fight him smart intelligently. And that's what Peterson didn't do. He got the machoism, the warrior in him, that Washington, D.C. street mentality got into him. And said, hey, let's get it on. We're going to make it a fight. Well, guess what? He made a bad decision in that night and to go toe-to-toe with him because Lucas Matisse, like I said, he's like Sammy Sosa, Mark McGuire. He could take you out at any time, but he wants to make $1 million, okay? He gets it. He understands, okay? And he's been knocking out guys left and right. What is he, 34-2 with 32 knockouts or something like that?
Oh, yeah. He's amazing, dude.
Let me ask you this, Joe. Who are the guys that survived with him? I want to take him out to dinner, okay? That's pretty, you know what I mean? Some guys that survived, went to distance with him. Hey, I want to know who they are, and I want to take them out to dinner and ask them how they did it. Jesus.
Quite honestly, I think they were four-rounders, brother.
Yeah. I think it was Zab Judah and Devin Alexander. Yeah. Devin Alexander that went the distance with them.
Ooh.
Yeah. And get this, they fought for their lives that night, okay? You know,
a lot of fight fans felt that both of those guys lost their respective bouts.
Yep. Yeah. And let me tell you, Matisse was still growing and learning. He still was developing at that stage. Uh-huh. Now this guy's a monster, the most feared 140-pounder out there in the world. They say they're going to put him and Danny Garcia. That's a fight I want to see because both guys are explosive home run hitters. What's going to win this fight between them two? Who has a better chin? Bottom line, who can take it better? And right now, they both can take it pretty damn good. So let's see what happens.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, and as soon as that fight is announced, we know that you're going to be breaking down the keys to victory for both fighters when that matchup is announced. But quite honestly, and we were talking about this with Ronnie, and I was addressing this on our first segment, this is a big, big problem for Golden Boy. They're already talking about this matchup, and the diehard fight fans want to see this. But this matchup hasn't really matured yet. I know Lucas Matisse just knocked out Mike Dallas Jr. Now Lamont Peterson, he's now a title holder at 140. But does he have the marquee name yet to sell out a big venue like the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia?
No, they're talking about the Verizon Center, I think, in D.C. for the fight or something like that, Richard was saying yesterday. They're talking about, you know, him and Danny Garcia, then co-main event Peterson against Zab Judah, the rematch and everything. So, but, yeah, when you knock people out like that, it'll pack the place and everything, okay? It's going to be an explosive fight and everything. Plus, Lamont Peterson against Zab Judah. That adds some appeal to it. But they're talking about the Verizon Center, I think, something like that in D.C., that where they're going to fight. So,
well, that's still 17,000, though, man.
Well,
I mean,
like I said,
I mean, can this really sell 17,000? Quite honestly, and I was talking about this with Ronnie, I honestly think that you should put these guys in the main event and the co-main event respectively first to try and build this up with maybe – Lucas Matisse taking on Sugar Shane Mosley, possibly being the first man to stop the Sugar Man, and have the rematch Amir Khan versus Danny Garcia to really mature this matchup between Danny and Lucas. What are your thoughts on that, my man?
They want to go right. You know, like I said, Showtime's been putting a lot of money building these guys up. They're ready to go right now. They're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna fill it around and do something like that. They invested enough money in this so-called tournament. They want to see who the real 140-pound champion is, okay? And they're ready to get it on right now because that's gonna be an explosive fight, I think, right now because the way he has been knocking guys out, his explosive knockout of Lamont Peterson, which nobody expected. The way Danny Garcia, how explosive he is. Yeah, the fight fans are ready right now. People in D.C. know this fight's hot over there, okay? Then they're going to have Lamont Peterson on the undercard against Zab Judah. You know, hey, that'll bring the fans out too. But when you got, the word's out there. I think it's seasoned enough, and they don't need to play around by fighting, Shane Mosley and whoever, to build it up anymore. I think the fight right now is hot right now. I think it'd be great in Philadelphia, but with these, hey, man, let's, just like yesterday, he didn't want to go into D.C. to fight Peterson, be fair and put it on neutral ground. So D.C. would be good because everybody knows he knocked out Lamont Peterson, okay? Everybody in D.C. knows he destroyed Lamont Peterson. So everybody in D.C. knows who Lucas Matisse is. I guarantee you everybody does. And I guarantee you everybody in the boxing world knows who Lucas Matisse is, okay? The machine, okay?
You're absolutely right, my friend. Now we've got 5 minutes left in your segment, brother, and I would like to discuss the controversial fight, Denis Lebedev versus Guillermo Jones, in which Guillermo Jones, his first fight in almost 2 years, comes back and defeats Denis Lebedev, not only taking his WBA title, but really creating a mess of his face, in which, just from a freakish left hand, his right eye just ballooned up just like ferocious Fernando Vargas in his first fight with Sugar Shane Mosley. James, a lot of people are saying that this fight should have been stopped a lot sooner. I'm saying hogwash. What are your thoughts on this? Should a champion be allowed to defend his title, especially when you let it go as far as the 11th? What are your thoughts on this, my friend?
Like we talked earlier, Joe, these commissions, they're becoming safety first, very cautious because, every time there's a death in boxing, oh, my God, the commission, they get bombarded with a lot of criticism and everything. They had a death here a few years ago in boxing, and they had another guy, Oscar Diaz from your hometown, get seriously hurt. And, the commission got a lot of flack for that. So all of them in the world, especially in Vegas, they're being very super cautious now to make sure these fighters don't get hurt, okay? If you get hurt, you better make sure you look at the officials at the ref side and let, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to fight. Let me fight. You let them know that you're alert, because any sense that he feels that you're a little hurt, that your eyes are glossy, your legs are kind of wobbly, you're kind of non-coherent, they're going to stop the fight. That's what they're doing nowadays. They're becoming more safety first, very cautious to make sure these guys are not getting hurt, which is good and everything, because one punch, like I said, could ruin you, man. One punch too many could hurt you and everything. So the fight last night, it was probably the referee got excited, frightened, and he stopped the fight and maybe prematurely and everything.
Well, what he did, and I thought it was pretty shameful, he started counting, and I had counted up to about 5, and he had already finished with his 10 count. It was ridiculously fast. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It was pathetic. It was like, goodness gracious, he just wanted this fight to end. I'm like, dude, just wave it off then, man. Just wave it off instead of counting ridiculously fast, like you knew, hey, I don't want to be on the hook for this thing. I'm going to stop the fight. Well, then just stop it. Don't count the guy, because he's trying to get up, and he beats the count, but the guy starts counting really fast as soon as he starts seeing him make his way up. I'm like, come on. That was retarded. That was ridiculous.
Well, Joe, Don King has got Guillermo Jones. So, I won't be surprised if he got the ref. He got one of his refs to make sure that, his guy got the favorable call.
Because, quite honestly, I thought it was a pretty even fight going into the 11th. And I'm sorry, he's the WBA champion. Give him a chance to defend his title. Let him fight through adversity. Quite honestly, I love seeing some fight in my fight. And the way that fight was going, my goodness, we would have seen one hell of an ending. Quite honestly, people are just freaking out because the eye looks so grotesque. But I'm sorry, it happens in boxing sometimes. Don't penalize the sport for that. It's, you know, this sport has never been for the squeamish, has it, James? We have about 30 seconds left, my friend.
No, no, no. This is a blood sport, it's a hurt business. So, you know what I mean? It's, sometimes, you know, like I said, fighters have to fight to it. Sometimes the refs are overcautious, and you and they'll stop it and everything. I'd like to thank all the fans out there listening in.
Well, I tell you what, thank you so much, James. You're the man, brother. We love featuring you on the show, but it's about that time. But we will talk to you next Sunday in the aftermath of Frotch Kessler. But JK, it's about that time, brother. Take
thank
us
you.
Home.
Listening to the weekend rap. Always like James Oates. Giving away the signed tees from middleweight champ, Mr. Peter Quinlan, and also from former WBA super middleweight champ, Mr. Austin Trout. Join us next weekend for the free giveaway. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week on the Weekend Wrap. And don't forget to catch us tomorrow night on a special Monday night edition of the Pugilist Corner. Have a great night. See you next week.